Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading from the Big Bend Sentinel.
Presidio youth take to streets to support Black Lives Matter movement. June 10th, 2020, by Beck Andrew Salgado, read by Melanie. Presidio. Passionate chants permeated the Presidio streets Tuesday evening as emphatic protesters marched up and down O'Reilly Street while clinging to cardboard signs that read, "Fight the power, Black Lives Matter, and matter is the minimum." The group of 14 young protesters, who were escorted by five Presidio police trucks that were present for the protesters' safety, congregated at the Presidio High School track before proceeding to march down to the Santa Teresa Church. Along the way, chants of "No Justice, No Peace" and "Black Lives Matter" were repeated as protesters walked with their fists up in the air. After seeing the wave of protests that have materialized in each and every state across the country, Presidio High Class of 2019 graduate Leilani Chavez decided something needed to be done in Presidio. Chavez, who lives in Las Vegas now, expressed that seeing everything that was going on and not being able to be home while it started really took a toll on her, and so she decided to come home and organize a protest of her own in Presidio. To urge people to join her in the streets of Presidio, Chavez took to Facebook and Twitter with an impassioned post that spotlighted the injustices behind the death of George Floyd. The post continued saying, "I want to be able to show the world that small towns like mine are standing with them, showing our support." The post was retweeted and shared across social media to bring awareness. Chavez, who was pleasantly surprised by the turnout, said that while the Black Lives Matter protests are more prominent in bigger cities, she felt they still needed to be represented in smaller ones too, because we all want to be one. Representing the Black Lives Matter movement was important to the Presidio resident, Jalen Goldston, who said, "Seeing all these people and reading all these stories about what's happening across the country is hurtful. For her, knowing that it could happen to me anytime is more than enough to encourage her to take to the streets to advocate for change." Goldston stated, "I'm like one of two, maybe three Black people in this town." And so she felt it was crucial for her to represent the movement where she lives in hopes of outliving the injustice that has plagued people just like her. Furthermore, Goldston stated that the protest was needed because Presidio is not a place where people are active on social media. And so she felt it was important to make a public statement in an attempt to help people become more aware of what is happening in the world. As the protest progressed, Presidio Mayor John Ferguson joined in, and the crowd embraced his presence with cheers. Ferguson, who was impressed with the efforts of the young protesters, urged them to stay with the Black Lives Matter movement, which he feels is of the utmost importance. At the civic level, the state level, and the national level, Black lives really do matter, said Ferguson, as he expressed that just talking about it is not enough. Rather, we need to prove it with our actions on a daily basis. For Presidio in particular, Ferguson feels that, in conjunction with the national conversation surrounding police brutality, some people may assume that those same injustices do not happen in small towns. But he highlighted the importance of being aware and involved to ensure that those injustices, in fact, will not happen in Presidio. And so, in that same vein, he applauded the protests. Ferguson also spoke to the group of protesters, saying, "As long as I am mayor of this city, the police will treat people with justice and be fair." Additionally, he referred to the protesters as the future of Presidio, the future of the world. After just over an hour of marching, the crowd reconvened at the Presidio High School field, where water was handed out and final words of encouragement were shared. While gathered in a circle, young protesters emphasized the importance of having empathy with other races and ethnicities during a time of strife. One protester raised their voice with the final statement, "Today for them, tomorrow for us." Hundreds turn out for Black Lives Matter March. June 10th, 2020 by Abby Perot, read by Melanie. Alpine. Hundreds of Big Bend residents gathered for a Black Lives Matter demonstration on a hot June morning last Saturday in Alpine. With an estimate of over 300 attendees, it was one of the largest protests in the Big Bend's recent history. The peaceful gathering echoed movement across all 50 states, where over 700 protests have demanded justice for the deaths of Black Americans at the hands of law enforcement. Cedia Woods, an African-American Sul Ross State University student, led the march down Holland Avenue with a bullhorn with chants of "Color is not a crime" and "There are no excuses for human rights abuses." Residents and business owners stood in doorways as the march processed. David Busey, a local jeweler, was in his shop when the protest came by. "It's a national situation, and Alpine is just a reflection," he said, calling the event a good thing that was very appropriate for these times. Others, like Alpine resident Wyatt Kibbe, said he was there on Holland Avenue to make sure things didn't get out of hand, like it had in larger cities. Sporting a Make America Great Again hat, Kibbe said, "People can do what they want to do, but it's so far away from where it originally happened." The Alpine protest on Saturday materialized almost 2 weeks after George Floyd, a Black man from Texas, died from asphyxiation from sustained pressure when a Minneapolis police officer used an unauthorized restraint of a knee on Floyd's neck for nearly 9 minutes. A bystander filmed the incident, which went viral and sparked protests that have already led to police reform from New York to Minnesota. For Lauren Martinez, a mother in Alpine, it was Floyd's cries for his mother as he suffocated that hit her hardest. Martinez said she attended the march because, "If I don't support it, would my child be next? I have 4 biracial children, and they are just amazing, and I can already see a trend where they are targeted." Saying she has noticed the color of their skin gets them less favor. When the march arrived at the Brewster County Courthouse, Wood stood on the steps, overwhelmed and in tears, as protesters flooded the lawn. Addressing the crowd, she said, "For generations, African Americans have been fighting this fight. It is unfair that I am 22, have a whole life to live, and I'm ready to die for it. That's a problem." Calls for change from Woods were hemmed with a message of love, and the student continually emphasized the need for a conversation, at one point addressing the counter-protester who was yelling over her, saying, "I love you," and asking to speak with him afterward. A message of racial justice in Alpine was ringing out from Woods, a student who attends Sul Ross, a university named for a Confederate general, in a county named after a Confederate colonel. De Leyva took to the steps to speak about living in Alpine as an Afro-Latina woman, having to moderate her behavior more than her white peers in order to avoid negative attention from police or authorities. "Educate your children so my kids don't have to do what I'm doing right now," the young college student implored. Alpine Mayor Andy Ramos and Brewster County Judge Elizar Cano both spoke in support of the event. Ramos said his ancestors were slaves and buffalo soldiers, and that the racism he experienced growing up in Fort Davis had been overcome with the work of the League of United Latin American Citizens and other organizations. "But there's still racism all over here. It's been hidden and compressed. And now with our president, it's reared its ugly head," Ramos said. "My generation, we did a lot of good, but we stagnated. We need a push in the butt, and you guys are the ones to have to do it," Ramos told the young people in the crowd. "You have to bring social change to this world. What you're doing, the movement, has spread across the world." Alpine's march caught national attention. It was written about on the New York Times website, featured on The Rachel Maddow Show on MSNBC, and discussed on the Texas Standard, a radio show syndicated across Texas. Days later, West Texas saw another Black Lives Matter event take shape in Presidio, where a small gathering of young people marched in solidarity with Black Americans. At the Alpine demonstration, Woods pushed for the small community to start opening up conversations about race as the next step. The event successfully registered 20 new voters and connected protesters to funds and phone numbers to call to demand change. For Martinez, she hopes to see certain changes after the nationwide protests too. "I would like for everybody on both sides to maybe get more training, stop racial profiling in police departments, and I feel like maybe everybody as a whole could use a workshop," she said, "to discuss racism and teach new skills to civilians and police alike." Martinez attended with Jessica Torres, another mother concerned for her biracial children. Martinez said, "We went to support the entire cause, but mainly to try to change something for them, so maybe they can have a normal life and not end up a hashtag." Coronavirus, live updates for the Big Bend region by Abby Perot, Stephen Paulson. Last updated June 10th, 4:39 p.m., read by Melanie. Presidio County has confirmed a positive case of COVID-19 in Marfa today. The case is a male in his 40s who has recently traveled to multiple nearby cities that have coronavirus outbreaks. The man is quarantining with four other family members, and the state is treating the situation as one positive and four probables. The Regional Office of the Department of State Health Services has already begun contact tracing to determine whether the family has had contact with anyone who would need to be alerted. It is the second confirmed case in Presidio County, with the first being a woman in Presidio confirmed on May 23rd. As coronavirus crisis drags on, businesses aren't foundations. Imagine reopening. "People are over it," one business owner said of lockdowns. "Well, coronavirus isn't over us." By Stephen Paulson, June 10th, 2020, read by Melanie. Marfa. As tourists have slowly returned to Marfa, the Chinati Foundation has been wondering what it will look like to welcome them back. Last week, the foundation invited select local guests to help in testing our reopening scenario, as Executive Director Jenny Moore put it in a phone interview on Monday. "Chinati Foundation has been consulting with local health experts and has no set date to reopen," Moore said. "But the group knows it has to reopen eventually and is already developing a range of safety measures, from requiring face masks to closing restrooms." Last Friday, some local guests got to see what that looked like. They booked their visits online, registering particular time slots to conform with social distancing. Buildings were closed, and gone were the guided tours. Instead, Moore said, they've developed new signage, making it a self-guided tour. Chinati Foundation is also considering a phased opening by, for example, opening the grounds before they open buildings. For Moore, the trial run was about helping the foundation walk through the process as we move towards an opening day. "This is very much a process," she added. "We're moving slowly with safety first." Not all Marfans have to grapple with the logistics of opening a sprawling art destination, but Moore's situation mirrors that of business owners across the tri-country as they grapple with reopening in a state that shows a do-it-yourself approach over strict statewide rules and long lockdowns. Texas Governor Greg Abbott started a phased reopening of Texas in late April, a move that gave the state one of the shortest lockdown orders in the country at well under a month. Many businesses were allowed to start reopening again by May 1st. At the same time, Abbott also overturned local decisions to take precautions, rejecting face mask requirements in cities from Presidio to Houston, and nixing Presidio County's temporary ban on short-term rentals. In a press conference on the reopening, Abbott described his rules as permission to open, not a requirement. But especially when coupled with the overturning of local rules, some Marfans felt like the state was passing the buck to them. "We have had lack of leadership from the state and nationally," said Buck Johnston, a city council member and co-owner of Wrong Marfa, who is relying on her own judgment as she navigates the state reopening process. "People are kind of confused about what the right thing is to do. I wish we had more direction." With her dual role as a public official, Johnston felt a need to be extra cautious. "Being on council, I need to set an example," she said. Last month, Johnston started organizing public meetings on Zoom to discuss the process of reopening businesses. The meetings were open to everyone, but primarily catered to business owners who wanted to discuss what protocols would protect both customers and businesses. A wide range of local businesses soon joined, from shops and art galleries to, full disclosure, the Sentinel. "They've been really supportive," Johnston said of the calls. "Not only did they help businesses coordinate on best practices, but they served as outlets for other business people who were struggling with these same logistical and ethical challenges in a town that runs on tourism and the service industry. We made sure when we started these meetings that there was no judgment about reopening," Johnston said. "People have to make money. We can't be shaming each other." Among the participants in Johnston's Zoom meetings was Kate Calder, the new owner of Community Marfa. Previously an employee at the store, Calder bought the business in May. As a new business owner, Calder was wary about how to proceed with reopening. On one hand, since she didn't own Community Marfa before the coronavirus crisis, she says she didn't qualify for some of the emergency loans and payouts given to more established businesses. "Being the owner, I have a lot of bills to pay," she said. "This is my livelihood." On the other hand, Calder loves Marfa and didn't want to do anything that might harm it. "The numbers are going the wrong direction right now," she said of the state's case count. And like Johnston, she felt frustrated with the lack of good information coming from state and federal leaders, as well as what she felt was a growing desire across the state and country to forget about the coronavirus and move on. "People are over it," she said of the crisis. "They're setting it aside." "Well, coronavirus isn't over us." For both Calder and Johnston, the Zoom calls helped them get a sense of protocols and best practices that left them feeling safer about attempting a reopening. "It started as a planning session, but it became more of a feedback session," Calder said. "Businesses that had reopened shared their input with those that hadn't." Calder opened a couple of weeks ago on Memorial Day weekend. Community Marfa is now appointment only, and Calder offers sanitizer and face coverings to guests. Johnston, meanwhile, is planning to reopen this weekend. She'll be adopting protocols similar to Calder's, including requiring face coverings. "I even considered turnstiles," she said with a laugh. It remains to be seen when Marfa will open more fully or whether the return of tourists and semi-normalcy will lead to more spikes in cases in the region. For business owners forced to make these tough decisions, it hasn't been easy. "I still don't know if it's necessarily safe that our town has reopened," Johnston said. Other business owners wouldn't argue it isn't. And that's perhaps particularly true for businesses like restaurants, whose business models focus on eating and social interactions. Nearly all of Marfa's restaurants are still to-go only or have temporarily closed altogether, like Selena and Capri. Krista Steinhauer, owner at Selena, was perhaps the first business owner in the Tri-County to shut down as a precaution against coronavirus. Within days, businesses across Marfa followed her lead. In an interview Tuesday, Steinhauer still didn't feel completely comfortable putting any timeline on her reopening. She pointed to a number of factors, from Texas's still rising case counts to the fact that there's kind of a two-week lag time of exposure in recorded cases as people who became infected with coronavirus weeks ago start to show symptoms and await test results. Steinhauer didn't want to speak in detail about her plans for Selena's future, but she was adamant about one fact: it's not going to be a full-service restaurant anytime soon. "I wish everybody would agree that eating a nice meal with full service is not important right now," she added. "There are more important things going on." After the interview, Steinhauer shared a news article describing how some Austin restaurants were once again shuttering as employees came down with coronavirus. "This is going to keep happening," she wrote. "Why gear up to open, which is no small task, only to shut down again?" For more, the Chinati director, the last few months, have represented the challenge of making really difficult decisions as locals grapple with an unprecedented pandemic and what that means for the local tourist industry. We were about to en masse close down very quickly in service of public safety and the public at large, she said. It's clearly a much more complicated process to open. MARFA leaders discuss emergency orders, EMS rates at city council meeting. By Stephen Paulson, June 10th, 2020, read by Melanie. MARFA. At a virtual city council meeting on Tuesday night, MARFA officials adopted the latest plan for reopening. The ordinance 2020-09 covers a variety of topics from the MARFA municipal pool, which will remain closed, to the gradual reopening of city buildings and services. One of the main issues for debate turned out to be rules governing trash collection rates at short-term rentals. As coronavirus hammered the hotel and short-term rental industry, city leaders allowed short-term rentals, which range from people who occasionally rent out rooms in their homes to commercial entities, to pay residential trash collection rates rather than commercial ones. At the city council meeting, MARFA leaders disagreed on whether such rules should remain in place. In my opinion, we should stop it, said Mayor Manny Baeza. He noted that the city was paying higher prices for garbage collection and had passed some of those costs onto commercial entities, of which he said short-term rentals were one. Council member Raul Lara agreed. I think we've been quite generous in our billing, he said. Both Buck Johnston and Yosef Ben Yehuda pushed back. When I originally proposed this, it wasn't my intention for it to be a timed thing, Ben Yehuda said of the revised rules. Instead, he noted that short-term rental owners are one group of people that has been hit particularly hard. He also said that some people only occasionally rent out rooms and are therefore not a commercial entity and likely don't have negative ramifications on the city's housing stock the way a full-fledged one might. Ultimately, the city decided to continue the short-term rental rate abatements through July 10th, at which point, unless the city changes its mind, short-term rentals will revert to commercial rates. At that point, according to the revised rules, short-term rental owners can apply for a waiver to keep their residential rates in place. It remains to be seen what exactly the rules for those waivers will be, though some city leaders proposed using host compliance to determine which short-term rentals are actual businesses versus more casual arrangements. They also want to use the company to track down unregistered short-term rentals. City leaders pegged the number of those at around 30. On the other hand, the city decided to maintain waivers for late fees and penalties related to city utilities. We can show more leniency, Mayor Baeza said, noting that many people have continued to pay bills. The city also briefly considered whether to further downgrade its color-coded phased reopening from orange to yellow. The system, which works like Homeland Security color-coding system for terrorist threats, will see a further downgrading of precautions once it reaches yellow, including allowing some visitors inside the library and MARFA Visitor Center. Ultimately, though, the city decided to remain at its orange precaution level, which will keep buildings closed. We do have some staff that are absolutely scared to reopen, said Mandy Roan, the city's director of community services. A lot of my staff are in high-risk categories. Separately, the city also decided to increase its EMS rates after Bert Lagarde, the city's EMS director, gave a presentation showing that MARFA's EMS rates lagged behind other regional cities. Lagarde said that these rates were letting insurance companies off easy, while city attorney Teresa Todd said the city was subsidizing medical fees that the federal government might otherwise pay for. The changes will see an across-the-board increase for EMS services, with one exception. Residents will get one free treatment without transport per month. Previously, the city had not charged at all for EMS workers to treat a resident without a transport to the hospital. New nutrition shop opens in Presidio. By Beck Andrew Salgado, June 10th, 2020, read by Melanie. Presidio. The sun beats down and heat ricochets off the Presidio asphalt, escaping into a quaint storefront. One is greeted with an eager voice exclaiming, "Welcome to Inspire Nutrition," before receiving one of the many combinations of shakes and refreshing fruit or spice teas available. This is the dream of Ojinaga native Anel Aranda, a dream that she has since made into a reality. Aranda is the owner of the new Inspire Nutrition, a shake and tea shop located on O'Reilly Street in downtown Presidio. Aranda opened the shop with the hopes of providing a healthy option for people who live in Presidio, but the story of how she opened the shop has been years in the making. Aranda, who left her home in New Mexico and is staying with family in Presidio to start her nutritional drink business, said that she had an idea and wanted to go for it. Aranda said she was first inspired about 3 years ago when, while living in New Mexico, she was introduced to her now good friend, Kat Ramirez. Ramirez, who also owns a nutritional drink shop, said her friendship with Aranda started when Aranda, who didn't speak English at the time, would stop by Ramirez's club with an interest in selling drinks and losing weight. In the 3 years since they met, Ramirez said Aranda took it upon herself to learn English, lose 30 pounds, and build up a significant customer base for her nutritious drinks. After just over a year of working with Ramirez at her shop, Aranda expressed a desire to open her own, to which Ramirez said, "Now is the time to go for it." Ramirez also expressed an admiration for Aranda's work ethic, saying that if anyone deserved to be written about, it is Aranda. This past week, Aranda officially opened Inspire Nutrition and enjoyed a busy grand opening that she deemed a success. As far as what Aranda envisions her shop being, she said she wants it to be different, not like a Starbucks where you just go and drink, but rather she wants to get to know the customers and become a place in the community where people can come to socialize. While Aranda does not have tables yet due to COVID-19, this more intimate experience with customers is scored by things like a community wall where visitors can sign their names, her first dollar on display, and shrine of Aranda's late grandmother. "It's more like a family-friendly place. I want people to come here and make friends," said Aranda. When asked about the name Inspire Nutrition, Aranda said that when she first encountered fitness and nutritious drinks, they were something that made me feel inspired. And she wants to do something with her shop that will help inspire other people in a similar way. She also alluded to starting exercise classes in Presidio parks for the community to attend. As far as long-term aspirations, Aranda hopes to open additional shops in places like Marfa, Alpine, and Van Horn. While she acknowledged that the prospect of opening a new business can be intimidating, Aranda simply said, "If you have a dream, you go see if it's going to work."
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, June 4th. No new corona cases in Ward County. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The 98 residents and staff tested for COVID-19 at Monahan's Managed Care last Tuesday, May 26, were all negative, bringing the total tested in Ward County to 272, with 12 pending, and only one positive as of Wednesday morning. Members of the Ector County EMS conducted the testing at Monahan's Managed Care. Ward County Judge Greg Holly said, quote, "All tests performed at the local nursing home, 98 total, have now been returned as negative. This is great news. The contact some of our residents had with the employee from the Crane facility apparently did not result in any spread of the virus among our residents or staff. As of now, we still have only one reported case in Ward County, which was travel-related. We have no confirmed cases attributable to community spread. Let's pray that it stays that way." End quote. As of Tuesday, Ector County had tested 176 persons with 5 deaths. Of those tested, 119 have recovered. Midland County has reported 137 cases with 13 deaths. Pecos County now has 95 confirmed cases, 65 in the N5 prison unit in Fort Stockton, with 24 recoveries. Andrews County has confirmed 27 cases, with 25 having recovered. Crane County now has 25 cases, with 5 deaths and 2 recovered. Reeves County has 13 cases, with 10 recovered. Winkler County has reported 3, all tested outside the county, and 2 have recovered. Total documented cases in Texas are now 64,880 and 231 cases, with 1,678 deaths and 43,338 have recovered. Nationally, there are 1,802,470 with 105,157 deaths as of Tuesday. Norwood booked for breaking into ex-girlfriend's home, assaulting her. This story was written by Christy Sullivan. Monahans police have arrested a man on 2 Ward County warrants who was accused of breaking into his ex-girlfriend's home and assaulting her in early April. According to Monahans police captain Christopher Quintana, quote, Sergeant Travis Andino responded to 1300 block of North Carroll on April 13th in reference to a burglary and an assault, end quote. Investigators said they later determined that 26-year-old Paul Norwood of 1805 West 2nd Street forced his way into his ex-girlfriend's home and assaulted her. Quote, the victim identified Norwood as the suspect, Quintana said. Norwood fled the scene, but based on the investigation, officers were able to secure 2 arrest warrants charging him with assault, bodily injury, a Class A misdemeanor, and burglary of a habitation, a second-degree felony. The assault could carry a penalty of a fine up to $4,000 and 1 year in jail. The burglary could carry a penalty of up to a fine of $10,000 and 2 to 10 years in jail. Norwood was located on June 1st, and he was subsequently arrested. Bond was set at $2,000 for the assault and $5,000 for the burglary. He posted the $7,000 bond and was released. Drilling activity continues to drop, gasoline prices up. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. In just 5 weeks, drilling activity on the Texas side of the Permian Basin has been cut in half. According to the May 29th report from Baker Hughes, Texas counties in the Permian Basin had 87 operational rigs, down from 176 on April 24th. The counts dropped below 100 on April 24th, and the activity logged at 99. This is the lowest activity level in over 4 years. New Mexico drops have been less severe, dropping from 70 to 61, with Eddy County leading Permian Basin activity with 39 rigs. Nationally, the number of working rigs has dropped from 491 to 321. There were 799 rigs running at the first of the year and peaked at 1,082 in November 2018, which was also the high point for the Permian Basin with 493 operational rigs. Ward County has dropped from 11 rigs on April 24th to only 4 in the latest report, the lowest since July 15th, 2016, when 3 rigs were running. Midland County has dropped from 31 to 22. Loving County dropped from 18 to 13, and Reeves County dropped from 17 to 12. Pecos County dropped from 10 to only 4 on the April 24th report. Andrews County is reporting 2 operational rigs, down from 3, while Ector County and Winkler County are reporting only 1, down from 3 and 8, respectively. With COVID-19 restriction easing and with OPEC reducing production, prices for West Texas Intermediate crude are generally increasing. The price on Monday, according to oilprice.com, was $35.61 per barrel, up by about $12 per barrel in the past month, and almost $70 higher than the record negative prices recorded in mid-April. But that price increase has not as yet been enough to stimulate a revival of drilling activity in the Permian Basin or the nation. Goldman Sachs is predicting estimates of $51 in 2021, according to an article written by Svetlana Pereskova for oilprice.com. Even though the increasing prices has not stimulated drilling activity, it has increased gasoline prices. According to AAA, the national average price on Monday for regular unleaded gasoline was $1.97, an increase of about 20 cents per gallon. The Texas average has increased from $1.51 to $1.65, while the average price in Ector County was $1.70, up from $1.61 on April 27. The price in Ward County is relatively unchanged at $1.97 compared to $1.96 a month ago. A year ago, prices were about 90 cents per gallon higher across the nation. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Monahans News on June 4th. Paula Pena passed away on May 27th in Odessa. She was born in Fort Stockton to George and Lazara Ontiveros on August 6, 1943. Paula is preceded in death by her daughter, Delma Garza, and grandson, Joshua Rodriguez. She is survived by her husband, Emilio Pena, sons Daniel Pena and wife Goody of Selma, Texas, Roberto Pena and wife Linda of Midlothian, and daughter Roxanne Pena Jaquez and husband Robert of Monahans, 11 grandchildren, 6 step-grandchildren, and 16 great-grandchildren. Rosary service was held Friday, May 29th at 3 p.m. at Harkey Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass was held at St. John Evangelist Catholic Church on Saturday, May 30th at 10 a.m. Burial followed at Monahans Memorial Cemetery. Funeral arrangements under the direction of Harkey Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made on harkeyfunerals.com. Elsie Potts Woodard, age 94, was called to her eternal resting place on May 26th. Elsie was born to Amado and Virginia Perez on July 21, 1925, in Key West, Florida. She was preceded in death by her husbands, Cecil Potts and Harold Woodard. She is also preceded in death by her beloved sons, Ray and Ricky. Elsie is survived by her children, Virginia of Buda, Robert and Linda Potts of Wichita Falls, Ronnie and Eileen Potts of Round Rock, and 4 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Graveside services were held on June 3rd at the Monahans Memorial Cemetery. Memorials can be made to the American Cancer Society. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Harkey Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made on harkeyfunerals.com. Nelly Salgado Jaquez was born September 22, 1951, in Grand Falls, Texas, to Anatolio Jose Salgado and Natividad Salgado. Nelly went to heaven on May 27. She gave birth to her only child, Carolina, on August 15, 1973. She married Jimmy Jaquez in 2003, and he precedes her in death. Nelly is survived by her precious daughter, Carolina Venzor of Monahans, 3 sisters, Teresa Waters and Frances Davila, both of Odessa, and Yolanda Sotella of Monahans. She is also survived by her beloved nieces, nephews, and many friends. Services are pending currently. The family will follow up with more information as it becomes available. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Harkey Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made on harkeyfunerals.com. Roland Adam Hook, passed away in Prescott, Arizona on May 25th. Roland was born January 25th, 1931, in Maud, Oklahoma, the son of Earlis Hook and Elizabeth Wolf Hook. In 1950, Roland was united in marriage with Larilla Hook. Roland was the father of two children, Stephen R. Hook of Corpus Christi and Gloria Elaine Lee, deceased. Roland made a career in the industry of oil and gas exploration and production and was a pioneering influence in deep well drilling. Roland is survived by Larilla, his wife of 70 years, son Stephen, and three grandchildren. Memorial services are pending. In lieu of flowers, it is requested that any remembrance be in the form of donations to the Southwest Wildlife Foundation in Scottsdale, Arizona, or to the Gardenia Jansen Animal Shelter in LaGrange.
Hello, this is Sonia reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, June 4th, 2020. TDCJ's COVID-19 report clouds numbers by Steve Fountain. Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster said that he is hopeful for a change in tracking that will lower the total confirmed COVID-19 cases in the county from 102 back down to under 30. Last week, the county's case total, as reported by the state, suddenly spiked to the surprise of local officials. The change, it turns out, was driven by more than 60 reported cases among the inmate population at the Texas Department of Criminal Justice's N5 unit in Fort Stockton. Schuster said talks this week with TDCJ officials have him hopeful that inmate or offender COVID-19 cases soon will not be counted toward a county's total. It has been a learning process, Schuster said of his talks with TDCJ. I've been enlightening them over the past few days. They are thinking about it one way and not another. They opened my eyes to some things, too. Schuster said that the inmates are confined to the unit and are not heading out to local stores and restaurants. As such, they should not be counted toward a county's case total like someone in the public. For the same reason, Schuster believes TDCJ staff should be part of the county's numbers. Schuster reached out to Governor's office for guidance and was referred to the Attorney General's office. My statement to AG office was that these are offenders and they are locked up, not going to be going to restaurants and stores, Schuster said. They should have nothing to do with rolling back from 50 to 25% unless someone higher up than me comes back and tells me different. In fact, Schuster said that as he talked to TDCJ, he became convinced that the department was still counting recovered employees and two inmates as active cases. They seem to be behind us on the recoveries, Schuster said. Part of the confusion resulted from the TDCJ reporting its numbers directly to its office in Austin, while the county reports its numbers to the Texas Department of State Health Services, Region 9 and 10 office in El Paso. That office assigns each case a number in addition to deciding to which county a case will be assigned. None of the cases the TDCJ reported to Austin were assigned case numbers, as is the case with those reported to DSHS. Schuster said he thinks TDCJ has 65 active cases among its inmates. PCMH resumes normal activity. After weeks of limitations and restrictions due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Pecos County Memorial Hospital announced this week that it is returning to business as normal with a few minor changes. According to Melissa Trevino, the hospital's marketing director, the clinics are now fully opened, elective surgeries are being performed, and teams from home health and from hospice care are again attending to patients. All outpatient services are available, including lab services, respiratory services, EKGs, and radiology services. In addition, the physical therapy team has resumed work with patients and is taking on new patients. The emergency room remains open 24 hours a day. All waiting areas allow for social distancing. Screenings will be conducted at all entrances where people will be provided with a mask and directed to the correct department for services. PCMH asks that if you have a fever, to please wear a mask before coming to the clinics and to let the screeners know. The new hours for the Family Care Center walk-in clinic, 511 North Main Street, are from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, and from 1 to 5 p.m. on Sundays. The walk-in clinic phone number is 432-336-4544. More than 60 attend peaceful protest. A nearly two-hour demonstration was held to honor George Floyd at Zero Stone Park on June 2nd. Floyd, a black man, died after a white police officer kept his knee on the side of Floyd's neck for almost 9 minutes while Floyd was handcuffed and lying face down. His death has prompted protests across the county. The demonstration in Fort Stockton drew more than 60 people. It opened with a 24-minute period of silence as demonstrators stood in a circle around the park's bandstand. The group then gathered in the bandstand for a time of prayer. From there, the demonstrators heard presentations on racism, personal testimonies, a reading of names of black Americans who died in police-involved incidents, and chants including I Can't Breathe and Black Lives Matter. Dayla Whaley, who grew up in Pecos County and just completed her degree from Trinity College in Connecticut, served as an announcer throughout the program. Attendees included Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster, Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander, Fort Stockton City Manager Frank Rodriguez, and Pastor Scott Owens of Northside Church. No law enforcement was present for the demonstration, which was held peacefully and without incident. Obituaries in the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, June 4, 2020. Antonia Galindo. On May 26, 2020, Antonia Galindo passed away in Dallas after a year-long battle with cancer. Antonia was born on May 10, 1945, in Boquilla de San Isidro, Mexico. She was married to Jose Galindo for 51 years. The couple has been a part of the Fort Stockton community for over 40 years. She is the mother of Valdemar Galindo, husband to Leti Galindo, Fabi Villesca, wife to Orlando Villesca, Santos Galindo, husband to Cynthia Galindo, Eva Ramirez, wife to Fidel Ramirez, Adan Galindo, husband to Diana Galindo, Edgar Galindo, husband to Erica Galindo, and Jennifer Kutzreba, wife to Jan Kutzreba. Antonia's passion in life were her family and friends. Her 14 grandchildren brought her joy every moment they were able to spend together. She was always welcoming to friends, family, and any strangers that graced their home. Visitation was held Thursday, May 28, 2020, at Heritage Funeral Home. The funeral service was held on Friday, May 29, 2020, at Our Lady of the Guadalupe downtown campus, with burial at Fort Stockton Catholic Cemetery. Roland Adam Hook. Roland Adam Hook passed away in Prescott, Arizona, on May 25, 2020. Roland was born January 25, 1931, in Maud, Oklahoma, the son of Erlis Hook and Elizabeth Wolf Hook. In 1950, Roland was united in marriage with Loria French Hook, the love of his life and lifetime partner. Roland was the father of two children, Stephen R. Hook of Corpus Christi, Texas, and Gloria Elaine Lee, deceased. Roland is survived by Loria, his wife of 70 years, son Stephen, and three grandchildren. Memorial services are pending. In lieu of flowers, it is requested that any remembrance be in the form of donations to the Southwest Wildlife Foundation in Scottsdale, Arizona, or to the Gardenia Jansen Animal Shelter in LaGrange, Texas.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading an article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram that was published Saturday, June 6th. Big Bend area slowly coming back to life after COVID. Many popular spots are still closed, but tourists willing to make the drive. By John McCormick, San Antonio Express News. Terlingua. With the coronavirus still lurking almost everywhere, the big family wedding in Ireland and the honeymoon to Italy didn't stand a chance. So last week, Grant and Kelly Heatley of Austin headed west for a more modest getaway that included kayaking on the Rio Grande. The Big Bend is our happy place, so it's a close second to Italy, said Kelly, 33, as she waited at the far-flung outdoor center in Study Butte. We just wanted to get the heck out of Dodge. There's just so much we can take of each other in a 1,400-square-foot home. 2 months after elected officials in Brewster, Presidio, and Jeff Davis counties took the precaution of closing all area hotels and lodgings, effectively snuffing out the area's lifeblood of tourism, the Big Bend is slowly coming back to life. While state parks are again receiving visitors, the Big Bend National Park, which last year drew close to 500,000 people, had a phased reopening beginning Monday. Other popular attractions that remain inaccessible include the Museum of the Big Bend in Alpine, the McDonald Observatory near Fort Davis, and the famous art galleries in Marfa. I think some people are still scared to visit. We are not on the way to anything. You have to want to come here and see us. And if the national park is not open, that's our main draw, said Kara Gerbert of the Brewster County Tourism Council. As the pandemic swept across the world and through most of Texas this spring, the Big Bend was one of the safest places to be in the state. Until last week, when a second positive result turned up in Presidio County, only one case had been detected in the three counties. Together, they cover an area almost as large as Maryland, but count fewer than 20,000 residents. Although controversial to the point of triggering a lawsuit, the decision by public officials to abruptly close the region to outsiders likely played a part in keeping the coronavirus at bay. Today, the region is reopening. In South Brewster County, there were signs last week that a recovery is underway. At the Lajitas Golf Resort, on an emerald course shimmering in the Chihuahuan Desert, the Duffers and Ringers were teeing off each morning last week. In the Terlingua Ghost Town, live music was heard at the Starlight Theater for the first time in 2 months. Like old times, hungry diners waited outside for a table, albeit one strategically spaced to comply with Governor Greg Abbott's 50% occupancy directive. Inside the Old Rock Movie Theater, tourists enjoyed novelty dishes such as chicken fried antelope and tequila marinated quail while dining beneath dangling cow skulls. Among those waiting on a rock porch were Matt and Shelley Rutherford of Austin, with their two kids, Olivia, 7, and Beau, 3, playing with a toy pop gun. School was closed, daycare was closed, and we were all home together, Shelley said. I said, we're going to drive west, and here we are. I always wanted to see Terlingua. For Bill Ivey, 64, owner of much of the ghost town, including the Starlight, the Memorial Day weekend brought a welcome change. It was surprisingly busy, the first business we've seen since the shutdown, he said. But if you look at my hotel bookings, it's almost nothing. Compared to last year, it's down 60 to 70%. Hiding out. In Brewster County, where county commissioners had imposed a 14-day quarantine on outsiders, deputies kept a sharp eye out for big city folks trying to dodge the law. We'd have people from Austin and San Antonio sneaking out here and going on private property, hiding out and camping. Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson said, we didn't write any tickets associated with the COVID. It was all associated with trespassing. The sheriff said things got pretty lean during the shutdown for some out-of-work residents in Study Butte and Terlingua. We had to deliver food to some of our citizens down south. People were starting to get hungry, he said. Two large cross-border food deliveries have already been made to residents of Boquillas, Mexico, which sits just across from the national park. The tiny town depends on park tourists, but with the crossing now closed, times there are hard. Local outfitter Mike Davidson is planning a third delivery in mid-June. Even now, with tourists trickling in and some people going back to work, many Big Bend residents are wary of a deadly virus that they know best from watching cable TV. We're completely open, but I think as a community, we're still worried, said Larry Francell, the emergency management coordinator for Jeff Davis County, home to the McDonald Observatory and the Chihuahuan Desert Nature Center. Even though we've had no positive cases, with people coming here from far and wide, it doesn't mean we won't get cases. The worrisome time is right now, he said. Noting the area's modest health safety net, Mimi Webb Miller, 71, who operates three small businesses in the ghost town, fears the danger is far from over. I'm worried about being inundated in this community. It could not be contained, she fretted last week in her hillside rock house. If someone got sick in my motel, I don't know how I could ever forgive myself. Marfa still closed. In Marfa, an old cow town that over the last couple of decades became a mecca for sophisticated culture tourists and a darling of the New York Times, almost all of the galleries, museums, and artsy shops are still closed. Some of the people meandering around the quiet downtown, where they reopened, most of the restaurants are still closed or are in takeout mode. The town's crown jewel is the 90-year-old Hotel Paisano, which in 1955 hosted Elizabeth Taylor, James Dean, and Rock Hudson during the making of the movie classic Giant. Here, guests are asked to wear masks when dealing with masked hotel employees. You have to respect people's feelings on this. Last week, we had some friends in from California. They were just as nervous as could be with anyone within 6 feet of them, hotel owner Joe Duncan said. We just reopened May 1st. Right now, occupancy is running around 20%. It's going to take a long time. Jose Pratt, manager of the Thunderbird Hotel, is getting a new type of guest, out-of-town lovebirds who come to get married after being bumped from their original venue. Their weddings were canceled, so they decided to come to Marfa and get married in the desert with a really small party, he said. The biggest problem for tourists, said David Beebe, a justice of the peace and restaurant owner, is that Marfa's best-known attractions are closed. There is not much to do out here. You come to see what you've read about. And foremost in Marfa, it's the art foundations, the Chinati and Judd. But they are not open, he said. Even the observation dome atop the majestic peach-hued county courthouse, a popular lookout spot, is closed to visitors. From his third-floor office in the courthouse, Beebe can look straight down Highland Avenue, the city's business district. I can see about 10 cars parked along the street. 2 weeks ago, there were zero, and that's the first time I can remember that since I moved here in 2007, he said. Minerva Lopez, the director of the Marfa Visitor Center, which remains closed to visitors, said she regularly deflects callers who want to visit. They are trying to get away from there, and we have the wide open spaces, she said. I suggest they take a drive down the River Road or through the Davis Mountains. A ghost town again. And even though the region's hotels are open again, the hard feelings over their abrupt shutdown continue to simmer. A lawsuit filed by J.P. Bryan, owner of the Gage Hotel in Marathon, against Brewster County Judge Eleazar Cano over the closures is pending in federal court. In the suit, Brian claims that there was no legal or public safety basis for Cano's March 23rd shutdown order and that it violated his constitutional rights. Other business owners also protested loudly, without going to court. Being shut down was hideous and it was extremely divisive, said Linda Walker, owner of two riding stables in South Brewster. Being a liberal all my life, I find myself oddly on the other side of this, more than I expected. Suddenly, right after the chaos of spring break, the tourists disappeared and everything just stopped. For those who rely on a weekly paycheck, it was a time of isolation and hardship. Nita Brashnir, 90, a longtime Terlingua resident, doubts the given justification for the whole ordeal. It was painful as hell. It was not fun for anyone, said Brashear, who suspects it was all a political thing. There is nothing to it. More people die of cancer, and they'd better not put coronavirus on my death certificate. They can put pure orneriness. For some other old-timers, the six-week pause evoked fond memories of the primitive communal life they had decades ago, before the ghost town was discovered by tourists. One old river guide, who arrived in Terlingua in the 1990s, explained those sentiments. Most people here are retirees or people who get mailbox money, and most of us were happy to get a break, the guide said. It was the old ghost town, as quiet as pre-millennium. No tourists or services. No lights at night. No highway growl from 170 in the morning. Only us.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.